Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky. And tonight, both co-hosts are coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky. I have with me the lovely Holly Phillippe. Hey, Holly, I know you're online there somewhere out there.
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Well, of course, with you, awesome. Loud is natural, so that's no big jump.
True.
Well, it's just me and you tonight in the co-hosting end. Turned out that our co-host tonight, the RG Westerman, unfortunately, has come out with a little bit of a feeling a little bit under the weather tonight. So you will have two co-hosts tonight and an amazing guest calling in just shortly. But it will be a great show, and we'll definitely be talking about quite a lot tonight. Should be a lot of fun. Yeah, some topics I know Holly quite enjoys.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
It's going to be very interesting. Awesome.
Yes, it will. Yeah, I think Vicky wants to also co-host at the moment. One of our cats is coming up on me right now. So who knows? If you hear a cat sound in the background, that's Vicky. But we're definitely getting underway here and very excited about the show. But we do want to bring a couple of things to your attention. And one was something that RG was going to talk about tonight. And I definitely want to give everybody a reminder. And that is Through the Tempest Black anthology project that RG has a story in, and we've interviewed Michael David Anderson recently on the show, also had a story in, of course, the great Rob Hoff. This is edited by the one and only Nathan Day, and has also Bram Stoker, award-winning author and editor Michael Nost. Great anthology project, and they got a campaign underway that's got about 49 days left on Indiegogo, and right now it looks like that's got 28 backers and about $1,060 as I speak, which is about a third of the goal that they are shooting for. But they got a lot of great perks, including book sets from R.G. Westerman and Rob Hoff and Nathan. You can also get those book sets if you'd like to support this project, Through the Tempest Black. J.H. Kimbrell is on there. I know Michael J.H. Kimbrell is also on there on the perks. But a lot of different perks. And I definitely invite you to check that out. And that's at Indiegogo.com. I'll give you the full URL. Indiegogo.com/projects/through-the-tempest-black. So Indiegogo.com/projects/through-the-tempest-black. And that'll get you over to their site. And definitely want to continue to mention this because it does involve a lot of Star Chamber Show guests and both editor and writers. And it's definitely a project that's near and dear to us. So we are going to cover this and promote this as it gets closer to the big event. So they got about 49 days left, so to be exact. So, but yeah, get over there because it doesn't cost much to get behind it.
I did want to mention, so people understand what the money goes to. It will go to paying the authors for their short stories and the publishing cost. So that's incurred, but we want to make sure that the authors, get a payment for their story. So that's what you're helping support, people, is the indie authors and helping them, get their stories told and out there. And it's a neat little project. please check it out.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Quality is going to be just off the hook. And the theme is great. It's a Lovecraftian type of theme to the short stories. So if you're into H.P. Lovecraft type stories, you're going to love this one. And definitely want to give a shout-out to some of our early entrants into the chat room. We've got Carol Preflatish, fantastic author, who has a new book coming up pretty soon here, third in the Nathan Perry Mysteries. So, yeah, be on the lookout for that this fall in the holiday season. And also, we also have the one, the only, Scott Connolly, who I love giving shout-outs to, also listening in tonight. So, yeah, definitely come in the chat room, leave questions, comments. We definitely love to draw those from there for the show, as you know. And you know, they also want to mention real briefly that Imaginarium has about, today is the 8th, so we got 10 days left to get discounts, and they're big discounts on early registrations and early vendor space, and also you can also get sponsorships and all that kind of good stuff, but definitely discounts on early vendor space and early registrations for Imaginarium 2022, which takes place next summer, and we'll be returning to the great venue that we had this year, Holiday Inn Louisville East. And so a lot of good stuff. We've got a lot of guest applications rolling in, and I know Holly loves to hear that. We got lots of guest applications rolling in right now for people to participate in programming, so that's exciting. Then that guest app is open, and yeah, we are looking for patrons and sponsors. So if you feel inclined, come aboard. Yes, it's coming.
If you haven't
coming.
Heard it's... from me yet, don't fret, because I've not went through them all. I wait till when we do the early birds, I kind of wait till the early bird thing is over. Then I'll go in and look at everything, because otherwise I'm just retracking, retracing, redoing work when I can do it, you know, in chunks at a time.
Oh, yeah, we don't like retracing and retracking here because there's plenty enough on the plate. Get over there if you'd like to get some early discounts on either registrations or vendor space. And certainly if you would like to be a patron or sponsor, definitely welcome that. That helps us because we want to make this year just spectacular, because this past year was the best we've had yet. And certainly the venue was the best we've had yet. And so next year we want to really take it up even another notch. So, yeah, definitely get ready for that.
The earlier you get in as a sponsor, the longer you are on the website,
promoted.
The more exposure
mm-hmm.
actually get. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Good thing for sure. And I know that this weekend I want to give a shout-out to the folks that are coming into Lexington, our hometown, the Lexington Toy and Comic Convention. And that's usually a very, very big event. Hope, like I said, with all the things going around with, concerns about, the current pandemic and all, I hope the turnout is good for it for sure, because it's a very large event, very much a pop culture event, a lot of celebrities, that kind of thing, Lexington Toy and Comic Convention rolling into Lexington this weekend. So, yeah, definitely safe travels for those of you coming to the Bluegrass. Be sure, if you do partake of adult beverages, get yourself a good Kentucky bourbon, because, hey, that's what I always got to say good things about. But
and if you're in town, give us a shout-out. We'll see, we're around.
Yes, we are around. Yeah, that sounds ominous, like we're lurking. But, yeah, we are around. So it's, but yeah, normally it's a big event, though. It's about 20,000 people. So it's going to be interesting to see what the turnout was. From what I saw on Dragon Con last weekend, a lot of the folks that I know that were going and posting photos, so they seem to have a pretty strong turnout down in Atlanta for the latest Dragon Con. So I guess, live events are drawing obviously well. If anybody saw pictures of the college football attendance this weekend, I mean, you had packed stadiums across the country, so hopefully the event will go well and they'll get a good turnout and bring some good tourism money to the Bluegrass, as we don't mind that in Kentucky, so always a good thing. But yeah, they're good folks, so yeah, go check that out, Lexington Toy and Comic Convention. And yes, Scott wants to know if any updates local Humane Society or dog meet and greet in the works for next Imaginarium. Yes, we are. Scott, we are working on that, and that is kind of spiraling out of that awesome visit with Tommy B. Smith and his new cat 13, which was adopted on the final day of Imaginarium, and I got our wheels going, and we're definitely going to look into having a thing like that at Imaginarium, like a animal rescue kind of group. Yeah. So that will be coming.
Louisville Humane Society can actually come out, bring a few doggies, you know, show them around.
Yeah.
People can check them out.
Mm-hmm. Or a good cat or cat and dog rescue organization too, because that's of course how we got our Vicky and Albert. They were from a cat rescue organization, so yeah, we definitely are fond of them. So yeah, we'll definitely keep you up to date about that as it develops. But right now, pretty much it's some of the straightforward stuff. It's guest applications, early registrations, early expo. We do have discounts for the next month on early film submissions. So if you go to filmfreeway.com/Imaginarium Convention, you can submit for the film festival, take in lots of categories and lots of types of films we take. And we're open internationally, so definitely check that out. And there's an early bird rate for that as well. We are a gold film festival there. So, yeah, a whole lot of cool stuff. So, yeah, a lot of the basics are open right now, but we will be announcing new stuff pretty much regularly throughout the late fall and winter. And, Scott, yeah, that's coming. We're definitely going to do something with the four-legged family members, otherwise known cats, dogs, and who knows what else. Maybe dragons. Yeah, I know Sandy Lander would love that. We had rescue dragons. It could happen.
Oh, I'd love to have dragons. That'd be awesome. Ooh, maybe we can get some of those flying squirrels. What's the correct name for them, Steve? Do you remember?
Are you talking about the sugar gliders? They're fun.
Sugar gliders. They're the sweetest little things. Me and Steve played with some.
They're glorious.
A couple years ago. They are so cool,
yeah.
But when you get one, you really have to devote to it because they miss you. They get attached to like one person, one or two people, and they like to be near you at all times. So like if, you know, with our profession, and it broke my heart because we can't really have them because you can't like leave them, you know, for days at a time. And you know, us, we travel a lot and they're going around and you can't leave them. You actually have to take them. And everything, but they are just precious.
Yeah, they are very bonded, and so yeah, you cannot break apart from them. They actually do get extremely depressed, and it's rough enough when we have to leave the cats for a couple of days. We know how they get, so I can only imagine the poor sugar gliders. But they are fun, and so yeah, we might have to contact those folks just because that is. I know people get a kick out of them having sugar gliders jump from shoulder to shoulder on people. They are a lot of fun. And maybe someday if I just, get a place in Belize to retire at, maybe then I can get a sugar glider or two. I decide to become a complete hermit. So we'll see. But not imminent. Don't worry, folks. I will keep rocking and rolling for the meantime. But we got two sponsors tonight. We'll make sure we get them in before our guest calls in, and that would be Per Bastet Publications and the one and the only Ren Garcia, who always asks us the big question at the end of his spot. So we'll go ahead with Per Bastet for the early part, and then we will follow that up with the Ren Garcia spot. So Holly can answer that question first, and I will answer it second. We have a lot of fun with that. But here's Per Bastet. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything. Explore post-World War II England with 11-year-old Sylvie and Edelweiss for Elizabeth, the sequel to Andrea Gilbey's Bottle Tops for Battleships. Or dive into the thrilling world of Karma and Crime, a new supernatural mystery by J. Paul Burroughs. You can find these titles and more at perbastetpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events such as Magna Cum Murder in Indianapolis in October. Per Bastet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. And again, that web address, superbastetpublications.com. Shout out to Sarah Marion, Marion Allen, and T. Lee Harris. They are just awesome. And then also tonight, the great, the one, the only, Ren Garcia. And we will be having Ren on the show to give updates because he's always making progress. But here you go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, we are, Ren Garcia.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And we are ready to have a great time tonight with our guest tonight. And I'm not going to delay things any longer, as I see our guest is on hold right now on the phone. And so I would like to give a wonderful Star Chamber show introduction and bring our guest on board. And our guest tonight is an author and an editor, a writer and editor at the PopularGrunge.com site, and also the author of the books Funerals to Die For, The Craziest, Creepiest, and Most Bizarre Funeral Traditions and Practices Ever, and the newly released It's Your Funeral, Plan the Celebration of a Lifetime Before It's Too Late. And so joining us for the first time on the Star Chamber Show, we'd like to welcome Kathy Benjamin. Kathy, your mic is on. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you aboard. Great to have you aboard. And we have a lot of curiosity and about your works because all the hosts have been chatting online today about them, as a matter of fact. And so we want to dive into those and a whole lot of other things because, you look like you have a lot of interesting activity, Kathy. So good to have you on the show for the first time. But, yes, give us a little bit about your writing as an author, and we'll dive right into the conversation.
I write humorous nonfiction, and that's what I've had published. I've written a novel, but it's not published yet. So that's kind of my career. I've been doing that for 12 years. I've written 2 books, as you mentioned. And, I don't know what else you want to know, but nice to get to talk about it for once.
Well, I noticed on your Twitter handle your Twitter bio that you also are represented by the Victrus Literary Agency, and of course that is also the home of someone near and dear to all of us, Matt Lation, definitely somebody that we love to have on the show. He's been a guest Imaginarium, so evidently you share the same agent as Matt. So do you know Matt? Just curious.
Yes, I know Matt very well. In fact, I think he may have been the one who told you about me. I'm not sure, but we
wonderful
chat all the time, and I've read his work, and he's great. He's absolutely fabulous.
Matt's we love having him. We call him the Thunder from Down Under. That's what we always affectionately refer to him as. But as far as topics of a more grave concern, sorry, we love puns around here too. You have a new release and I'd love to get describing your humorous nonfiction and the topic, because I know Holly's going to dive right into this because she loves the topic you write about. But yes, you combine humor and funerals, which a lot of people are going to be scratching their heads at first. But tell us about how you kind of got into writing on that topic and started like I said, your first book back in 2013 and now a new release.
Yeah, it was one of those things that was just kind of an interest of mine, death and funerals. I started having panic attacks when I was a teenager, so I was constantly thinking that I was going to die. So I was like, how do I kind of control this in a way? I'll learn about death, and I'll take college courses on death, and I'll read books about it and all those things. So it was kind of this weird thing that I was using as a kind of exposure therapy. And then I became a freelance writer kind of by accident. And about 3 years after that, I was contacted by Adams Media, who's a publisher. And they were like, hey, we've read your stuff online, and you seem like the right kind of weird for this book idea that we have. And they didn't say what it was about. But as soon as they described it as like weird, I was like, oh, please be about death. Please be about death. And then it was my first book, Funerals to Die For.
Quite a title, too. I love it. It's Funerals to Die For, the craziest, creepiest, and most bizarre funeral traditions and practices ever. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's one heck of a title. I know that got everybody's attention here when we were prepping for the show. And definitely want to pass along that RG is very sorry she couldn't make it tonight. She was really looking forward to it, but she is definitely under the weather a bit this evening, so I was unable to make it. So you get Holly and myself, but, yeah, Holly, don't worry. Holly's a fireball, so she'll cover for both. RG and herself.
I have all kinds of questions. So when you're
go
ready, I'm ready.
We're ready.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask. I'm going to end up. I haven't read it yet. I'm going to end up ordering it later on tonight. So you have a sale, and I will be reading this. But.
But wait, hold on. Kathy, see, that's proof. That is objective proof that when you appear on the Star Chamber show, your sales go up. We always like to say that.
It's true. And my son, one of my sons is actually studying to be a mortician. He's actually in school for it. He actually works at a funeral home, you know, internshipping and everything. And which is fascinating. He's an EMT. I worked as a nurse for over 20-some years. I've experienced death on many different levels. My question would be, have you ever experienced, I mean, what's your experiences with death, and how did that factor in to this book? Because I know your fear of, like, death with panic attack. I totally understand that, because I have had a lot of trouble with that in the past, and, you know, you feel like your throat's swelling up and your heart's racing, and you think you're going to die, and you're actually facing, like, impending death. So I understand that. But have you actually, like, experienced it, you know, with close family members, you know, seeing people go, things like that? I mean, what's your level there of experience with death?
No, I've been very, very fortunate in that very few people close to me have died. I've lost all my grandparents. You know, I'm almost 40. That's kind of expected at that point.
Right.
But when it comes to what I would term the more kind of tragic, close to you, early cancer, things like that, death, I've been very, very mm-hmm. lucky, or I suppose everyone around me has been very lucky. I've only been to two funerals in my life.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't know either of the people very well either. So, yeah, it was kind of, I suppose, like when I had grandparents die when I was a kid, I was actually kept from those funerals. So I didn't go to a funeral until I was 12, and it was very traumatic. I had not been prepared by the person who took me. So that's probably where kind of a fear originated. And that's what I kind of want people to address now and be able to not experience that. So even though I haven't had a lot of death around me, it was just that first connection, that first time seeing a dead body in a casket was really traumatizing. And I think right. whatever age you are, you need to be more prepared for that than we kind of are as a society.
Totally agree. And I think the, we've got such stigmas with it, and it's, I mean, you know, we are humans. So we are, of course, you know, jealous people, and we don't want to give up people. Let's put it that way. You know, when we lose a loved one, we're greedy. We don't want to give them people up. And then we end up grieving for them. And it isn't the dead that suffer. It's the people they've left that actually suffer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the dead are okay. It's the people that's left. And so they're the ones feeling the pain, the anguish, you know, that can last a lifetime. And, it's terrible that we view it in such a bad light. Not all cultures do. Like in Mexico, they have the Day of the Dead, which I find beautiful and fascinating. They celebrate it once a year. You know, they celebrate their dead, which I think you should, you know, of respect, reverence, you know, and celebrate them. And I love the idea of Day of the Dead. Stephen has different views on that. He was more like what you were talking of. He's you know, very creeped out about it. He doesn't like it. It's not a good discussion for him. He don't like to go to funerals, you know, and all that. But it's a part of life, and people need to realize that. And I love how you're making better light of it, and people need to think about it. You know, we don't think about it on a day-to-day basis and be like, oh, yeah, you know, we just think, oh, well, one day we're going to die, you know. But you don't really plan ahead. And I love this whole premise of your book where you're actually planning ahead.
Yeah, and as you say, it's about the living, basically. You know, it's exactly. Once you're dead, you're dead. So it's really easy for us personally to kind of say, oh, I'm just gonna let it go. I'm just gonna not gonna think about it, and then I'll be dead, and it's someone else's problem. But that someone else is like your kids or your sibling or God forbid your parents or something like that, and they're gonna be really, really upset anyway. You know, it's gonna be some of the worst days of their life, and unfortunately, because of, you know, the reality of what happens to dead bodies, is this has been a huge event that has to be planned within essentially a week, depending on your religion, within a day. You know, this is something that you don't have the luxury, once someone is dead, of taking their time on. So it only makes sense to me that if you care about the people around you, you know, your kids or whatever, then you want to leave them a roadmap and say, here, I know you're going to be super sad because I'm dead and I'm amazing, but here is what I want. And I've been very, very lucky in that it doesn't seem weird to me, because my family is a very control freakish family of planners, and they've all done this. Like my grandmother, my most recently deceased grandparent, knew, you know, she was 94. She had a detailed plan. I believe she wrote her own obituary. Like she knew exactly what she wanted.
I love it.
And she had discussed it with my father. My parents, who are thankfully both alive, have, you know, basically this book only official, like with a lawyer and everything, like a trust saying this is what we want. And it's all planned out. And so for me, it was just normal. And I was like, the fact that I don't have to worry about this, the fact that it's all planned, that is something that everyone should have. And it kind of reminded me of something that my best friend in high school, hi Sam, if you're listening, she's the only child. And she said, you know, she was in high school at the time. And I remember her saying, like, I'm fine being an only child, but one of the things I worry about is that when my parents die, it's just going to be me, you know? And so that's for me, this book is like being better for the living.
Right. I love it. My brother, I lost both my brothers. So my parents, my oldest, my father's, and he's 89, and my mother is 86. But I've lost both of my brothers. And my one brother, Danny, he actually told us everything down to the, because he had cancer. So, he could plan his. We knew it was coming. It was impending. And he told us exactly what he wanted, what to go to. You know, he had guns. He wanted this gun to go to this person and this one to go to that. And it was great that he had the time to do that, you know. And he told us, you know, how he wanted his funeral to go. He wanted his cowboy boots on. So, and he told me and my mom and dad, make sure you look at my feet when I'm in the, you know, funeral home. Make sure I have my cowboy boots on. And I promised him we would. And so the funeral director actually went to school with my brothers. And so she actually showed us that he had his boots on, you know. But, yeah, he told us everything, what he wanted to wear, and I think that's great when you have that choice. You have that time. If you do not have that time, it's great to do what you're talking about, and is to plan ahead. Get it set up with a lawyer. Get a living will. Get, you know, I think that's a great idea, because then you go out in the style, you go out the way you want to go out, you know. I personally don't want people mourning, you know, really bad over me. I want them to have a celebration of my life. You know, enjoy yourself. Have some drinks. Have some laughs. You know, I'm trying to be funny. I try to uplift people in life. I want to do it when I'm going out, you know. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned too that your first experience, because I wanted to mention that actually was what got me on the road to the kind of view that I have, because I had it was very hard for me being an altar boy and serving at the mass of a family friend. And that was my first experience with a funeral, and that really kind of, you know, affected me. And that's why I've had a difficult time since with funerals and that kind of thing. And my sister and I, you know, have parents that were only children. So, you know, when we lost our father in 2006, then my mom passed away in 2013. You know, we didn't have a whole, you know, 2006, my mom was still here, but we didn't have a whole lot around us to you know, as far as like, you know, people to work with or plan or anything like that. So it, you know, just comes on you like a hurricane. And so, yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah. With the planning portion, but mine's going to be a little more difficult because it involves fire, archers, and me floating on a platform in the water. So that's not quite legal according to U.S. law.
You know, you've told me. Stephen has told me exactly how he wants to go out. We done have it planned. My daughter took archery in high school. She's going to shoot the first arrow. I just have to figure out either getting permission to put him on a pallet and light him up, or, you know, if I can't, I'm going to have to do it on private property and figure it out. But, yeah, Stephen wants to go out like a Viking.
I will just note at this point that the problem with Viking funerals, other than the fact that they didn't historically happen, was that you cannot get the fire hot enough to burn you. So you're not actually going to, like, cremate, but you will end up like a slightly charred corpse washing back up on the shore at some point.
That's
so just consider that.
I do have an ace in the hole for that, but I can't. I can't entirely discuss it online, but I do have a fail safe for that problem. So, but
My son is going to work for school, you know. We laugh now, we cry later. But yes, we've had this discussion. Yeah. And me, see, I tell Stephen, I've told all my adult children, I have all adult children, that I'm going on the hill. Where it's out of state, but it's where I grew up and where my one brother Jerry is buried, because he's buried right beside my grandfather. And we always joked because we'd like, whoever goes first is going by grandpa. Well, you know, my brother Jerry went first, and he planned ahead though too. He told me, he says, I'm going up there right beside grandpa if you don't go before me, you know. And he done wrote everything over to me because he's like, he was 18 years older than me. So he says, you're going to end up taking care of me anyway. So he planned ahead, thank God. But, yeah, it people need to think about these things, because otherwise you leave your children in a mess, because now I'm an only child right now, and I am dealing with so much of my parents' stuff. But me and my mom have these conversations. Dad, he don't like to talk about it, but mom's more open to talk about it since, well, we've been through it with my brothers. But, you know, she's more open to it. So I pretty much know what they want. And we already planned their funeral. We went to the funeral home here a few weeks ago and already got that done and out of the way. But yes, I encourage all people, just like you, you know, with your book, do what you can beforehand. That way, you know, you're not doing it when you're mourning, because that's horrible. You can't even think straight.
Yeah, it sounds like I read a number of your reviews, Kathy, and it sounds like, you know, a lot of them comment on the humor, the lightheartedness, and I know that, you know, it's not, you know, we've got I've got a little Irish heritage, and so I know the Irish wake is often a little more of a lighthearted affair than a lot of other cultures, you know, funerals and things like that. So it sounds like you have a little bit more of that kind of approach. Is that part of it?
Yeah, I think I'm very torn on the kind of funeral that I prefer. It kind of goes back and forth. On the one hand, I think the celebration of life, the very messy wake kind of thing, I think that's incredible and wonderful. But on the other hand, I'm like, funerals are a time where you're meant to grieve, where you're supposed to come to a realization that this person is dead and you're never going to see them again. And it's really sad and horrible, and you can cry, and that's fine.
Right,
So, you know, I suppose it's really... You know, it's whatever the individual wants if they're planning it, but it's also for the people who are left behind. Like, what is going to help them? You know, do they want to celebrate the life, or do they just want to grieve? Like, or is it a mix? And, you know, you can have a wake and then a really serious funeral and all of that if you, you know, plan ahead. So it's a tough one. Like, I think there's stuff to be said for all of it. And there is really no right way to mourn, to grieve. Like, we've been trying for 100,000 years to nail it down.
True. Everybody mourns differently. Everybody's grief process is totally different.
Yeah, you can't predict how you're going to grieve. You might be like, oh, okay, I'm going to grieve this way. Like, oh, I'm going to be really sad. And then you might just be like, oh, I want to laugh and make jokes at their expense. And you just never know how it's going to hit you.
That's so true. Not until it does. And then it hits you like, you know, a bolt of lightning, you know, and you're numb at first. And then, the realization kicks in. And there is 12 steps of grief. Do you go over the 12 steps of grief in your novel?
No, I don't talk about like that. I don't go into a lot of like the psychology and things because I think that's probably beyond me. I do a little bit on a few things, just say ways that humans do deal or attempt to deal with grief, but mostly I just go with things that have happened in the past history-wise, just because I think once you start stepping that toe into the mental things that happen, that's way out of my pay grade.
I do like what's some advice that you can give that maybe you touch on the book for people that have maybe thought about planning? Where should they start?
I start my book with basically what do you want to happen to your body, because that's the most immediate issue, obviously. The first about 25% of the book is like, look, here's the things you can do with your body. It's a lot beyond just kind of what we would consider traditional burial and cremation. And so cover some of the weirder or upcoming, like, things that are getting more popular, a lot of green burial stuff, because obviously everyone cares about the planet a lot, and they want to go out in a way that's not increasing their carbon footprint. So there's a lot of kind of new ways that you can do that. So that's definitely where I would start. And from there, you kind of start having to think about the paperwork. If you do want to, have something slightly weird done with your body, then you might have to get permits for it, or you might have to see if the venue that you want will allow it. So I just kind of go through the book in what I think is a logical order of, like, here's the big thing you need to decide, what happens to your remains. And once you've decided that, okay, then you know what you need to do with venue, and then you know how much things are going to cost, and then then you can start worrying about things like what your playlist is going to be and who's going to give the eulogy and things like that. So I think that, start with the big one and go from there.
And even the pictures, I think it's a good thing to pick out, like, what pictures you want to use, because I know a lot of funeral homes now show, like, slideshows. And different things. And, even picking out certain pictures. I mean, you can get real in-depth with it. I know a lot of people are comfortable with it, but it is like I put in the chat room, it's a part of life that's very traumatizing, but it is a part of life. It's a natural part of life. It's Stephen calls it unnatural, but it is a natural.
Well, that's a
part
philosophical,
of life.
Spiritual. That's a long theological discussion, but we can't cover that here. Yes, I stand by that.
Yes, but none of us are getting out of here alive. I always say none of us are, and with me being a clairvoyant and medium, I've seen spirits my whole life. I've talked to them my whole life. Stephen knows all this, of course. He lives with it. But,
lots of interesting things happen since I dated Holly. That's since I fell in love with Holly. Strange stuff, let me tell you. I can't deny
it. That's why death to me means something totally different. Death is not an end. Death is a new beginning. And it truly is, because we are eternal beings, and we do go on. And, it's not an end. People always think it's an end. It's not an end. It's just a end to this, but a beginning, elsewhere. And I know us as humans, we're going to mourn, because that's how we are. We don't want to give up the people we love. And it is hard, and we're going to mourn. It's human nature. But, if you can make it a celebration, like I said, of your life, instead of everybody being so sad, that would be great if you can plan ahead. So I love the whole premise of your book. I just can't wait to dive in.
Now, I mentioned the Irish, and, yeah, we've talked about, like, some of the different variances in the various cultures and stuff. Do you mention – I do find this one very interesting, but I hope I don't mess this up, but the Tarawa or the Taroja community of Indonesia, they're the ones that every year they actually bring out their past relatives from the tombs and clean them up and clothe them and basically hang out with them all day and even light, like – you know, give them drinks and things like that. It's a really fascinating thing that even takes the Day of the Dead thing, like I think a whole step further. But I'm curious if you mentioned them in your book.
I don't mention them. I mentioned a very similar thing that's done. It's either in the north or the south of Madagascar. And it's very similar where it's not once a year. It's when when an ancestor comes about every 3 to 5 years, 3 to 7 years, I think it is, into one of their kin's dreams and says, okay, it's time to let us out, basically. And then the community will go into the tombs and take the bodies out, and they'll rewrap them in linen, and then they dance with them. And you'll talk to them, and you might ask them
for
like a favor. Yeah, and so it's this whole – and, like, it becomes a big festival thing. Like, people come and they sell stuff, and, yeah, so it's kind of amazing, really. It seems, I suppose, you know, in a Western context, it seems just crazy when you first hear about it. But then you're like, wow, like, to be that connected on both a spiritual and just, like, a not afraid of remains and turning it into a dance party and something beautiful is incredible.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the Taroja community or Taroja. I don't know if the J is pronounced, but yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're listening, want to Google them, it's Taroja, and they're Indonesia, but they have a really unique custom that's very similar to what Kathy was describing with that group. And yes, I've seen some documentary stuff on it. You're right. It's different cultures react different ways, and definitely the Western reaction to something like that's definitely definitely very different than it would be in another part of the world. But yeah, it's definitely interesting for sure. And when you're looking at that.
Are they the same ones that Steve? Are they the same ones that after death they kind of like mummify them and they just sit them around? They're somewhere in the world, and I cannot remember where it is.
That's them.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, they bring them out.
Yeah, they actually take pictures with them.
They bring them out every...
Yeah, so often. Mm-hmm. They'll sit them at the dinner table. They have dinner with them. You said, they dance with them, and they'll take pictures with them. And I'm like, well, it's fascinating. But to a lot of Westerners, we're thinking, oh, my God, that's being disrespectful to the body and blah, 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 blah. The people are dead. This is just respecting their point of views, you know, the way I see it. They're not doing anything bad. That's their culture, and they're respecting their dead, you know, and giving thanks to the ancestors. But here, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, but that's how culture is different.
Well, Western culture tends to be have a bigger aversion to the topic, you know, even from the get-go. So it's definitely not the easiest topic to even to kind of bring into a Western culture, you know, because most people like to kind of avoid that topic here. But that's why, you know, I think Kathy's work is so interesting, because it kind of, you know, with the humor, it cracks the ice and gets you into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, you know, I've read about things like funerary cannibalism, where there have been tribes — it's not really done anymore because you can get sick, but there have been tribes where they kind of ritually eat just a small portion of the dead person, and it's considered, you know, something very, very respectful to do. And yeah, of course, that sounds — and it's not meant to be enjoyable. It's not like you're saying they're going, ooh, yummy, grandma. It's just like, this is how you're respecting them. And, you know, it does sound just like absolutely so weird. But then I'm like, how must we look, either to like our ancestors or to outsiders of different, very different cultures, of like, we have taken death and we have removed it from our lives to such an extent that, honestly, I think it's unhealthy. And I think that's where
I agree.
The death positive movement, which is growing — Caitlin Doey, Undertaker, started that — and this idea of like, what we have gone too far. Like, this is not healthy that we are just like, let's dying people in hospitals, and let's not think about it, and let's not talk about it. That, you know, to me, that's just as weird.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we went way too far with it, and people do not with Western civilization. I don't think they actually go through all the grieving processes fully, because they're still clinging to it, because we have such stigmas with it, and you know, see it as such a horrible thing instead of a natural thing. With me being from the medical field, you know, I've actually been with people as they're passing, many, and had to, you know, take care of the body afterward and all that. So I've experienced that at a personal level. And it's not a odd thing. It's not a scary thing. I don't view it as a natural process. It's natural, which it is natural. But like you said, we have put so many unhealthy stigmas with it that, yeah, we don't properly process it. And it becomes such a devastating blow when it happens to us, you know, around us, family, friends. You know, it's like it's something that don't even pass people's minds until it happens, and it's like, pow, hits you over the head. Now you're going to deal with it. And, you know, it is unhealthy. I agree. Total, 100%. And then you do give, let's see, you were talking about worksheets. In your book.
Yes, I was curious about that. Worksheets.
Do you have?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that the whole book is basically is meant to be interactive in that way. It's meant to be a place where you don't just, you know, read about history or read about options and decide what you want. You actually can record it. And I would say, you know, there are limits to a book. It, in a lot of ways, it can be a jumping off point. But there's lots of pages to fill out as you go through reading. It's not like they're all stuck in the back. It's, okay, we've just talked. You've just read about all the different ways you can dispose of your remains. Here's the sheet where you're going to record what you want and why, and any other notes. Maybe you contacted a funeral home and or put a down payment down or start paying it off or anything like that. And you can record all that. And then as long as your loved ones, your next of kin know that you have this book and where it is, they will have access to all that information. Ideally, I would hope the book would then spark conversations as well, again, so it's not just limited to the book, but at the very least, they would have a record of what your wishes are.
I love it. What are
yeah,
some
it.
Of the cemeteries that you, have you like visited a lot of like famous people's grave plots or cemeteries, or I assume you've done a lot of research, but what are some that you invite people to actually check out to get some ideas?
Like cemeteries to go visit to just see like an option? Yeah. I would say if you there's kind of been it's so weird because there are fads in everything, including funerals, including cemeteries. But there was a fad during the mid to late 1800s for something called garden cemeteries or rural cemeteries. So most places will have a really nice older cemetery where the headstones will be like sculpture, like they'll be like art, they'll be beautifully carved, and there'll be trees and maybe some paths, and I would say go to those, because then in the 20th century we kind of went to memorial parks where it's kind of just flat and grass, and then they have the flat headstones. Those are not as much fun to wander around, but if you can find one of those more artistic ones, one of those more rural open ones, they're just absolutely beautiful to hang out in and see what can be done. Just tombstone, the headstone wise, is just absolutely amazing. And also just then you get a connection to people who lived, you know, more than just a few years ago. You also, I feel, kind of get a sense of peace and just feeling really happy about, like, the fact that we live now and what we've accomplished as humans when you see how young everyone is who died there. So, yeah, they're just, they kind of have everything. They're like a park, and they're like an open-air sculpture gallery, and they're like a place to have really deep thoughts and then get some ideas for what you might want. But yeah, you don't really have to go to like famous ones. Like I tend to not, I've been to quite a few famous cemeteries, but I don't tend to seek those out. I right. just like my husband and I did a road trip to, I live in Texas, and we did a road trip to Arkansas last month. And along the way, we literally, there was a historic marker, and we literally just stopped on the side of this empty road. And it's just this little tiny family cemetery, which was open to the public. And in these trees and just really old 1800s gravestones. And, you know, we just stopped there for like an hour and walked around the whole thing and took photos. And, you know, it's there, you know, those kind of cemeteries are everywhere. And they're just as meaningful to go to. You don't have to seek out, you know, so-and-so's famous grave, which is cool too, but.
Yeah, I've noticed too that there's also a nice history. I know America is more of a younger country, but if you go to Europe and all, obviously a much older world there, but you see different motifs that are emphasized at different time periods. I find that fascinating, where on gravestones you'll see certain stylistic motifs that are specific to one era, and then, you know, then others that are specific to another. And yeah, I was watching some stuff Holly was showing me. There's a lady on one of the social medias that Holly follows, it actively cleans great old gravestones now and does a wonderful job, I might add. But yeah, it's interesting to see the motifs she talks about that are specific to different eras. And so, yeah, there's even a little bit of a historical snapshot to different graves in the way they're done.
I forget the lady's name, but she's on TikTok, and she actually takes a pressure washer and cleaners and brushes, and she goes to old cemeteries, like you're talking about, rural cemeteries, and these ornate graves and such that you can no longer read because the moss and, you know, nature has taken its course. And she cleans them up the best she can. She scrubs them, she pressure washes, and then she'll look up the history on them before she does a video. And when she's cleaning, she'll tell you the history of that person. She actually goes and looks up the genealogy and the history of that person, which is fascinating. And then also, I went to Stephen has seen where he doesn't like to go to graveyards, but I do, and the one I'm going to be buried in is in a very rural, out in the middle of nowhere area, you know, where my brother and my grandparents are. My great-grandparents are there. There's people from the early 1800s that have died, people that were born in the 1700s and, you know, passed away in the 1800s. But there's graves there that you can even no longer read. They're just stones, and it's sad. But, you know, there's the ornate ones like you're talking about. There's the big tall ones with the angels on them and cherubs, and there's baby ones, which is sad, with the sheep carved into them. And, I mean, it's just very sad because a lot of these gravestones have outlived, you know, all their family, so they're not, you know, exactly cared for like they should be. But, yeah, I'm going up on a hill in the middle of nowhere, and it is quite beautiful. There's a creek there. You know, it's very calming and surreal. And, yeah, I love that. I love that a lot better than, like you were talking about, just the old flat, you know, graveyards. But to each their own, whatever people like, you know, in life, I think that's what you should have with your remains.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where going to the graveyards and seeing the different the different styles and everything. I kind of for a long time didn't know anything about what these different motifs meant, like the lamb and things like that. And there's another Texas author, Chewy Snyder, who does basically research into graveyards and gravestones, and she has a book that is all about, like, what do the hands that are, you know, the hands kind of handshaking mean, and what does a broken column mean, and all of these really, and then you go and it's not just so much, oh, these are pretty. It's like, oh, okay, I get what, you know, they were trying to say with this iconography on here. I'm trying to remember which decade it was. It was like 1870s, 1880s. There was like this brief period where the really cool thing to do was to have like a chair, like an empty chair, but made out of stone. And that was your gravestone.
Right.
And I'm like, what were, like, okay. And so you'll find those all over the country. Like, just that was the cool thing, to have an empty chair as your gravestone. And I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah, whatever.
Somebody can sit down, you know.
Yeah.
One of your loved ones could sit down and have a chat, you know, or whatever. But, yeah. I have seen those. I've often wondered what the deal was with that. Yeah, Steve,
I
we
think
have a question
to...
in the in the chat room.
I was going to mention that. If you want, do you want to take it, Ollie, or so I want to get Scott's question in there. Yeah.
Well, let Kathy go ahead and finish what she was saying. What was he saying, dear?
Okay.
Oh, no, I honestly don't quote me on this, but I think the chair is supposed to represent, like, the empty chair that they've left behind, I think. But I'm not 100% on that, so.
Like at the table. That's what I was assuming, like at the dinner table.
Yeah, this is their empty chair.
Yeah, if I had a stone, it would look suspiciously like a Kentucky bourbon bottle, so, or barrel, possibly, but. That's what mine would look like. but go ahead, Holly. Go ahead and get that question in there.
Oh, you want me? Okay. Scott's asking, have you noticed any of the changes in different generations? Like 50 years ago, it might have been more planned and discussed, and the next generation lives more on a whim. And what are the ways to open up to a family to that type of planning?
Okay, to take the first part, there's definitely generational changes that you can see, but I would say the biggest changes were the early 1800s when you get the Romantic era, so you have Lord Byron, and it takes death from this kind of messy, gross thing that happens. So you have to remember death was all around everyone all the time. You were going to lose kids, you were going to lose parents, things like that. From that to, you know, then you have these Byronic poems of like, oh, the hero and he's dying, but he's so sexy while he dies, you know? So it turned death into this kind of literally this sexy thing that people would talk about and read about and write about. And then right at the end of that, you come into the Victorians, and the Victorians took death and they bent it to their iron will. And we are still living that to this day. Like that, you know, when we think, you know, especially in the West, when we think about the standard, oh, this is what everyone's always done. No, it's what the Victorians started doing around 1850. And it's what we're still doing today. And yeah, so you have that during the 1800s. But then in the early 1900s, what you get is you still have this Victorian way of mourning and doing funerals, but you take the death that was around you, and that's when you start seeing larger hospitals built, and that's when you get doctoring as like a specific type of career. So you take people who are dying and you take them out of the home and you put them somewhere else to die, and you have someone else taking care of the body. This is also when funeral businesses are really starting to boom. And so we still have this Victorian idea of like this very rigid sense of what mourning is, but we don't experience death in the same way. So that's kind of where we are, I think. That's my interpretation of where we are generationally. So while there have been kind of minor differences, those are the things that are still affecting us today, I think. I think we're at a sea change right now. I think people are more willing to talk about it, especially the younger generations. And I think for talking about it with your family members, it so depends on the person. Because, and I know that's kind of a cop-out, but it's so weird when you talk to people. People you think wouldn't be willing to talk about it really are, and people you think would be fine with it really don't want to talk about it. So it's just, if it's a loved one and you kind of know them the best, that's just how you would bring up any difficult subject with them. You know, I don't know, filing for bankruptcy or just whatever, you know, just put a different thing in your mind and be like, how would I broach this with them? I do think generally, though, using a little bit of levity and humor is always better than sitting someone down and being like, hey, we're going to have this really sad, depressing conversation that neither of us are going to enjoy and it's going to suck so bad. Like, who wants to do that? Like, okay, let's talk about the positives of doing this and how it's going to help the people that we love and how it's going to save us money. And, you know, if we plan ahead, positives of this thing that, okay, yeah, it's going to suck.
Right, right. And the Victorians, which my favorite era, by the way, my Queen Victoria, but the Victorians actually did, and I don't know if you touch on this, but what they call death masks. And a lot of people don't know about this, which amazed me because it was all over then. You know, they'd actually take clay, you know, a substance, and they would actually
make a mask of the dead ones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even earlier than that, I was in a museum. They had sent over a whole bunch of stuff from England to a museum in Houston, and they had all, I think, I don't know if it was the actual one, but they had Oliver Cromwell's death mask, and Oliver Cromwell died in, what, late 1650s. So, like, yeah, they would, and then the French Revolution, Madame Tussaud, that was originally what she did during the French Revolution, was she was in charge of making death masks of the people who were being executed after they died.
Yeah.
So that must have been fun. Yeah. So like these were definitely big things. But one of the reasons behind death masks too is that before photography, if you had someone die and maybe their body wasn't claimed, or if there's no representation of them, and then a family member comes and goes, "Hey, was someone here? Did they die?" And it's like, okay, is this them? Like, is this them? Because this is where they're buried. Do you want their body? Kind of thing. So there's like all of these things that seem weird when you dig into the period and the reality of what people were dealing with at the time. It's like, oh, okay, that was a solution to a problem they had.
Right. Right. Yeah, because they did, like you said, they took pictures with their deceased loved ones, and all that, for they would bury them, which seems morbid now to us, but to them, it was a way of them preserving their loved ones, you know, which is something unheard of now. I've known a few people in my life that's actually taken pictures of loved ones, like at the funeral and stuff, but it's not common. I will say that it's not common. People see it as morbid.
It's becoming common. Oh no,
it is more common. You're right.
There's a section in the book on funeral selfie etiquette, because now the Instagram generation, they go to funerals and if you don't get a photo, it didn't happen. And so taking a selfie with the body or with urn or whatever remains. I'm not saying every young person does it, of course not, but it is becoming one of those things.
Right.
Document our lives and put it online, and it's coming back.
Yeah, and live
wow.
streaming too. Because I know the social media platforms are quick to knock those out when people try to live stream from a funeral. But yeah, that happens too.
Yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, on the one hand, it's like, okay, a lot of people don't want to see that, and so if you're Instagram or whatever, you're probably going to jump on it. But on the other hand, like, yeah, we're just doing what the Victorians did for different reasons, but people have done it before,
true.
So it's not any different. Yeah, true.
Well, I've got a treat. I got a real treat for you, Kathy. Earlier we mentioned the Thunder from Down Under, your friend who also shares the family at your agency there, and Victress Literary, and I have him on the phone. And yes, folks, the one, the
Woo!
Only, Matt Lation. And Matt, your mic
hey.
Is on. I want to bring you aboard here surprise Kathy.
Hey, guys. Hello, champion. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, a little tired. I've been waiting about 20 minutes to get on. I didn't want to interrupt, so, but I know that you were just so much into your death chat. No, I just wanted to be a quick call and let you know that I'm really proud of you and of the book, and it's doing so well. I'm glad that you got on the show tonight, knowing Steve and Holly very well. It was great to, see that you guys have connected as well. It's been a great show so far. I seem to have missed the part where I was mentioned, so I don't know what happened there, but I'll probably be listening to it from the start, because I did miss the first half hour or so. But now I'm...
Oh, they were slagging you off. They were saying horrible things about you. I mean, I'd go back and listen.
Oh, yes, it's terrible.
Terrible.
That's that's what my... But you know what, that's what my own family does. So that's why I always say Steve and Holly are like family to me. Yeah, that's exactly the context I'm in.
That's crazy.
Very quickly, though, I do have a death and gravestone story. I was visiting Boston for the first time, and I went into a cemetery, as you do. There's so much to see in Boston. Let's go to a cemetery, of course. But it was really cool. It had a lot of famous headstones in there. And also, I learned a little bit, too, about just some of the symbology associated with gravestones. I also learned about infant mortality, because some gravestones had children of the same name, you know, that had passed away very young, and so that was very sad. But I came across the stone, and it had a huge winged skull at the top, and it had crossed bones underneath, and a couple of other things, and you would never have picked it as the gravestone for Mother Goose. I was initially surprised that Mother Goose was a real person. Till then, I didn't know that. Her name is Mary Goose. But yes, I'll send you a picture later, mate. But yeah, the gravestone of Mother Goose does not look like you don't associate her with the gravestone she's got. It's the last thing you would expect.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah. No, it was a really. It's a weird saying. It's a really cool cemetery, you know, like it had people like Sam Adams there. And as I mentioned, I learned a little bit about some of the other symbols and what they had, and yeah, just stumbled on Mother Goose. So, not what you envisage, but that's my little gravestone story. But I'll let you guys get back to it, but real proud of you, champion. We'll probably chat tomorrow, yeah?
Definitely, for sure.
All
right.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you. Love
Bye.
You, mate.
Love you, too.
Oh.
Bye-bye.
Always love a visit from the founder of the Lation Nation. Oh, yes. That was awesome. That was cool. That was cool. Yeah, wow.
Now
Mother Goose sounds like Mother...
Just...
Oh, yeah. That's always fun. But yeah, he's something else. But yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah, a winged skull. It sounds almost
that's
like the logo for the heavy metal band Overkill or Avenged Sevenfold. Yeah, it's a winged skull. Yeah,
it does.
Pretty awesome.
Sevenfold. Yeah,
And Overkill has one too.
Like,
yeah,
a person either. So that's kind of cool. Have you been? Kath, have you been, like, to Salem and actually seen all those old graves up there, like, from the witchcraft trials and all that?
You know, this is one of those things where I don't actually remember where I was because I was young, but until I was 14, I lived in New Jersey, and so we would go on field trips to that kind of thing. So I know I've been to, like, Cape Cod and I'm all in like Plymouth Rock, and I'm almost positive I've been to Salem, but it's one of those things where I'm not exactly sure where I was, and I was so young that I don't remember it correctly anyway, but I would love to go back for sure.
Oh yeah, because the you do see a lot of differences, like you were saying, between the stones. They were a lot more ornate and different things back then, or they will label them, you know, they would say a witch is buried here, or you know, they actually would label, you know, with the big red A, like the Scarlet Letter, or, you know, things like that. They actually, I've seen that where they've labeled people, too. And I've also seen gravestones that depict their profession, you know, like if they were doctor or lawyer or judge or something like that, too. Have you ran across those?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I'm trying to think of the one in Texas. There's a whole bunch of weird things that you can find that are very Texas. People are very proud when they're from Texas. But one of the things you see just everywhere is like the Masonic symbol, even on older graves, because obviously the Masons
have
been around for at least 200 years. Let's put it that way. And so, you'll see that, and around here. I have seen, you'll see obviously military symbols and insignia that, you know, people who have served have. But around here you'll see, you know, UT, like the University of Texas, like Longhorn, like very,
oh, wow.
I've seen cowboy boots. I've seen, these are like the newer ones. But yeah, you will definitely see some things where people were like, yeah, this is, I've seen, what was the one at the place down the road? I think there's like, gosh, I want to say NRA, but I don't think it's the NRA, but it's something very gun related that's on there. Yeah. So it's, yeah, you do see some, even now people are doing, I think the difference now though is it's not, obviously we live in a very different society of what, how many people can do what. So we don't have a lot of people who do stonework like that anymore. So it costs a lot more. Whereas right. in the olden days, it wouldn't have been the equivalent of what it is now when it's, you know, thousands of dollars if you want something like that. It would have been easier right. to get something a little more ornate, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Sure. And sure. I do have a Texas connection, Kathy. I graduated from Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, Texas. So I do know at least West Texas a little bit. But, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll have to, yeah, one day when I get to return to Texas, I'll have to check some of that out. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, the other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, your tombstone is something that's going to stay there pretty much forever. You know, it goes away. So that is cool if you can get stuff on there that, you know, reflects who you were as a person.
Yeah, and that's something I keep going back to in the book as well, is that the goal here really is you want every part of your funeral up to and including, you know, we cover the gravestones in the book, is you want something that reflects who you are. And as much as your family and friends may love you, do they really 100% know who you are and what you're proud of or proudest of and what the kind of things that you want to be remembered for and the way you do? And so part of this recording of everything and planning things ahead of time is making sure, for example, you have a headstone if you want a headstone that does reflect you.
Right. Now, my brother Danny, he was a cowboy, but he had beagles. He absolutely adored beagles. My dad always raised beagles and used to run beagles, and they actually didn't use them for hunt. There was hunting beagles, and then there's beagles they run in trials and stuff. They actually have, like, tournaments where they run these beagles. I know it sounds crazy, but they do, and they grade them on, you know, how well they run, how they're holding their tail. I mean, it's a whole crazy thing, but they have beagle trials. But anyway, his favorite movie was Where the Red Fern Grows. And so on his tombstone, we had two little beagles, and it says Dan and Ann, which his name was Danny, and it has Where the Red Fern Grows. And we've tried to grow a red fern there a few times. It just don't work out. I guess the dirt, it doesn't like it there or whatever, but it actually is on his tombstone, so that reflects, you know, a little bit of who he was. And I also like the idea of people placing different things where if you're allowed. I know some cemeteries don't allow, they like for special holidays and stuff, they'll allow flowers or whatever, but you can't actually fit like little stuff or decorate it. But where he's at, it's rule, and we're allowed to put like little ceramic beagles and rabbits and stuff like that. So that's always cool too, when you can actually, you know, put stuff around, little lamps that are solar powered that glow at night and stuff like that too, just to, you know, make it pretty for them.
Yeah, I was in the solar powered lamp thing, actually, I suppose, because I do go to a lot of cemeteries. I don't tend to go at night. You know, I'm not going there to like get creeped out. I want to see things. But I was actually in West Texas in June. And we were in this like cabin thing, and there was this beautiful view. But one of the things in the view was a cemetery, and also I didn't know it was there. They had not included it in the listing. I can see why, but for me, I was like, this is the best. Like, this is the cemetery right there.
I'm gonna go check it out.
I know. But then we, you know, we wanted to see the Milky Way at night, so we're up at like 4 a.m. We're like, oh, we're gonna go outside. The whole cemetery, like every grave, had a colored light on it, and when you're not expecting
nice.
That, we were like, whoa. But it's so cool.
It is. It's really neat because, you know, it gives it light at night, and I think that's a neat thing, too. Not all cemeteries, you know, allow that, but the rural ones, you can pretty much put whatever, you know, and I think that's kind of cool. I like
yeah.
the light.
It's kind of like if you want a cemetery that has an HOA, basically, like, do you want your loved ones to be told what they can and can't do? You know, that's just part of the planning. Are you going to get a snobby cemetery, or are you going to get one that lets them do fun things?
Right, because a lot of people just don't care, you know. There's a lot of people just like, just bury me anywhere. Throw me in the ditch, I don't care, you know. And they just don't care, and it doesn't make a difference to them, but other people does, you know. And you need to have that discussion with your loved ones and those around you. Like I said, I've already told my kids, they know, you know, how I want to go out and everything, where I'm going to go. And I've told Steve, and so he's aware. And yeah, it's something I'm comfortable talking about, you know, but not everybody is. And it is a hard conversation. Just like Steve was asking, you know, I mean, Scott was asking chat room, you know, how to approach that. And it, like you said, it just varies person to person, really.
Yeah, and it's kind of the sense when you were talking a long time ago about your mom being okay talking about it, but your dad not so much.
Yeah.
And it always just occurs to me with parents, especially parents to children, it's like, you know, parents all the time say, I would take a bullet for my kid. I would die for my kid. And I absolutely believe them. So you're willing to die for your kid, but you're not willing to have the conversation about you dying with your kid. You know, it's like,
right.
it's not any scarier than actually dying for your child. So you should be able to have this conversation.
Well, what's so funny though about my dad, he didn't want to talk about all, but he worked, he's a retired drill sergeant, but he also worked, he was in the Army of Reserves for years, so he worked as a foreman in a casket company. So like all my growing up years, child, you know, I used to play, he'd bring home the casket stickers, and I thought they were the coolest things ever, and I'd stick them on my toy box. And maybe that's why I got my view of death. I'm not so freaked out about it. You know, I was always around it, but my dad built caskets for a living. But he told us here just a few weeks ago, he's like, this is the color I want. He told us the exact number, model of the casket, and that's what he wanted. So when we went to do their funeral planning, me and mom went, we told the funeral director, we're like, this is the exact model and the color. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's I have that. I know exactly which one you're talking about. You know, so he's like, this is an unusual funeral planning because this is easy.
Yeah,
I already knew the model covered everything, you know, so. Yeah, at least he told me that. But, yeah, I grew up around the casket company. You know, I was used to it.
Yeah, but it's one of those things, especially if you do look up something like a casket and you want to either pay for it in full or start paying it off, you end up – I say this because, especially over the past year, the GoFundMes for people who have died, especially of COVID – so many GoFundMes of, you know, we need 10 to 15 grand and we need it like in a week to pay for this funeral. And so I know that not everyone is in a position where they would have that extra money, but it's one of those things where if you do get to an age where you have a bit of extra cash and you want to save your kids money, you can pay off things like your coffin at the price they are now, because just like weddings, funerals go up exponentially every year. So, like, if you pay for something now, you end up saving whoever is in charge of the bill. And I know, on the, you know, it's like, oh, it's not me, who cares? But if you care about the person, you end up saving them a lot of money down the line and worry.
Totally agree. That's why we went ahead and did my mom and dad's, got that all set up and everything. Plus, I don't have to worry about it when one of them pass. You know, it's not a worry then. It's taken care of. Done, you know. But that's why I like the premise of your book, because, heck, you could even go one step further. You can even write your own obituary, you know, your own obituary and everything, which I find is fascinating. Have you wrote your own obituary?
I have a bit of the only experience I have with the obituary was my Nana, and she had actually written hers again. I fully, you know, except certain things like the date she died. And what we discovered, even though she had like paid for everything and everything was planned and everything, she hadn't paid for her obituary. And it turns out that obituaries in newspapers are really expensive, like per line, ridiculously expensive. And who reads newspapers anymore? So I don't have like an obituary in that kind of sense. What I do have is a document on my computer where I've kind of written just kind of my message to my loved ones, like more generally, and like what, you know. And I've edited it since I first wrote it, like as things change in my life. And so I kind of want that just to be something that gets sent out to everyone. You know, I'll have a list of email addresses maybe or something like that. And just be like, here, this is for the people I care about. And I want them to read it. But definitely being a writer, there's that sense of control of like, I'm not letting someone else write my obituary. I'm the writer. I get paid to do this stuff. It's going to be best if I do it.
I totally get that. Yes, Stephen would be like, well, that ain't how I would have said that, and that's not, you know, how I would have enunciated that. And yeah, he'd be the same way.
Oh, those persnickety writers, you know how it goes, Holly. But that is... Well, we are coming up on about 10 minutes left in the show, so I do want to ask you, though, about your you mentioned that you're currently writing a novel, I believe, and want to give you a chance to definitely tell folks what you are able to about that project.
Oh, yeah. You know, any publishers listening, it's on submission. So anyone wants to, you know, pay me for it, that would be great. But, yeah, it's called, at least right now, it's called Area 54, and elevator pitch is it's what would happen if you took Area 51 and Studio 54 and you slam them together. So it's about a secret disco for aliens in 1979 in New Mexico. So, yeah, there you go. Or Nevada.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this one has some humor in it too. I'm guessing from your comments there.
That's all I know. That's all I know how to write. Yeah. So it's definitely a funny first novel. It's definitely going in, going, okay, this is a ridiculous premise. How much fun can I have? And also maybe there should be a plot at some point, but you know, mostly just let's have fun.
Well, that sounds great. I know I'd like to read that. Yeah. Hollywood too. I know that.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
I mean, I'm biased. I think it's a great idea. I think someone should pay me a lot of money for it. I'm just saying. So that would be lovely.
All right, publishers, come on. The publishers that can pay a lot of money. Please, yeah, please do.
We don't have tons of money.
Movie deals, yeah, all that. That's what I'm looking for here. So no.
That's awesome. Yeah, and. Yeah, I wanted to give you a chance to mention that for sure. And also just a bit about your work with the website, grunge.com. I found that interesting. Yeah, is that your normal – I mean, that's your day gig, so to speak, if I'm
reading it
correctly.
Yes, my day job, grunge.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they are – I've been there a few years now, I think 4 years anniversary. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I started out as a writer there, and then I moved into editing, but I still write – occasionally, and it is just so much fun. Grunge is, I know grunge doesn't really tell you what it is. It's like basically like weird history, weird science, true crime, you know, any kind of tragic, mysterious, strange history, like politics and basically anything you can put the word weird or mysterious in front of, we will cover it. And then with a dash of like entertainment history as well. And it's, yeah, we have long features, which is what I edit and write. And then we also have a news section, which we call news, but really it's just shorter features. So, yeah, if you like history, weird, paranormal, we always write a lot of stuff for Halloween. So there'll be a lot of stuff coming up about that. And it's legit stuff. I know that there's, you know, kind of a thing online with like listicles and clickbait. That is not what we are. Like, I can reassure you, we are so like crazy about editing and like fact checking and using good sources, and it's really like quality stuff. I love it.
Imagine that, a site on the internet that takes, you know, all that in consideration. That's awesome.
Let me tell you, as an editor, I wish we didn't, because it makes my life a lot harder. Like, the fact checking is hard, you know?
Well,
it would be so much easier to go, yeah.
As a prose editor, I'm definitely sympathetic to you on the editing front. I imagine it's crazy working as an editor on a website, definitely with a range of topics like that. That sounds awesome, though. I'm definitely
cool.
And then too, where do you want folks to find you on the internet? This is the part of the show where you can give your linkage or Twitter handles and all that good stuff, whatever you want to share, so folks can find you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but like very sporadically. Definitely the best place to find me is on Twitter, and my handle is just @KathyBenjamin, at my full name. There's no mm-hmm. underscore or anything like that. Just @KathyBenjamin. That's Kathy with a K. And yeah, that's, you know, I'll, if you
say something to me, I'll respond. I love to hear from people. So, and I suppose the only other thing with, like, quote unquote finding me is if you do purchase my book and you enjoy it or you hate it, I don't care. Reviews are the lifeblood of authors. If you could review it on your website of choice, that would be amazing as well.
Yes, and this book is brand new. I believe the release date I saw was like August 17th. So, I mean, this is just come out of the gate. And such a great group of blurbs you've got already. And I noticed you got a nice one from Publishers Weekly. So congrats on that. Yeah, you got kind of a nice collection of blurbs already for this one. So it sounds like, a good start. So that's always encouraging.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, it's too early, at least for me, to know, like, sales numbers or anything like that. So I'm just going by what people are saying online and, you know, hoping that it's doing well and hoping that people will enjoy it. And, you know, as much as it is like, you know, I've got to get out here and sell, it's one of those things where if you do get it, I really, really, really hope that you will use it, that people will use it, that they'll actually write in it and use it to spark conversations.
Well, I know we're going to up your sales. I know we're planning to get one. Holly's going to be getting it here shortly, or maybe already have. But, yeah, once again, proving that your sales go up by being on this show. That's an objective fact.
I suppose I should say as well, actually, that even though we're talking about, like, worksheets and things, there is also an ebook version, which is the exact same thing. And so you can, like, just make your own sheets and fill it out. There's also a wonderful audiobook with a wonderful narrator. And so whatever your preference is on books, it's on all of them.
Nice. So there is an audiobook version. Yes.
Yeah.
I'd pulled up your Amazon page, and, yeah, I do see that is there as well. And, hardcover edition. So, yeah, kudos to you on that. That's awesome. That is fantastic. And do you have any I know it's kind of we were just talking about some rather large events that once come in election in this weekend and one happened last weekend in Atlanta. But the events are kind of hit or miss nowadays with the whole pandemic thing. Do you have any live events going on at the moment or anything you'd like to promote as far as appearances?
I do not have anything live. I mean, that wasn't even really a consideration, unfortunately, from the beginning of this, which, you know, is sad, but it's understandable right now. But yeah, if people follow me on Twitter, I've been doing a lot of podcasts and things like that, and so I will share them, or you can go back and find the ones I've already done. So definitely anything online will be posted there.
Fantastic. And it was very easy to find your Twitter handle, I might add, because I followed you just before the show. So that's not a hard thing to find, folks. So go online and definitely connect with Kathy there. And, we got a couple minutes left. So is there anything else that we have not mentioned on the show or discussed that you would want to kind of get in here at the end, Kathy?
Gosh. No,
did we cover it all?
I think it's covered it all. I suppose I would say that, you know, chase the dream, people. You know, if you want to write, it's worth it. It's incredible. Like, this is the greatest career in the world. So definitely. And if anyone finds me on Twitter and wants to chat about it, I'm always happy to chat about, you know, career stuff, because I would be lost without this career path. So, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely can second you on that because, we've had our own adventure on the creative road, both Holly and myself. But, yeah, we wouldn't trade it. I mean, definitely what keeps us going every day. So fantastic. And, yeah, we can't look forward to having you on the show again in the not-so-distant future because, like Matt, you know, we like to catch up with our guests. We don't want it to be just a one-time visit. So, yeah, we'll definitely want to catch up with you again, Kathy. And thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you. I'm sorry, it's not your favorite topic. We can talk about some.
Oh, see, you are good because you can make a topic that I'm not excited about normally, and you made it fun for me even. So see, you're good at this. Well done.
Thank you.
Well, definitely, folks. Yeah, next Wednesday, Star Chamber Show, 9 p.m. Eastern. We'll have another guest, a wonderful guest on from the creative world. And I will pass it over to Kathy and Holly, and you all can take it out.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you so much, Kathy, for being on tonight. And, yeah, I invite you, check out entertheimaginarium.com. We'd love to have you as a guest. It'd be great if you could come up. It's going to be July 8th through 10th next year at the Holiday Inn East here in, well, it's going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. And, yeah, get a hold of me. We'd love to have you. It's a load of fun, a lot of info over the weekend, and you have a unique subject to bring to the table. I love it. I love it. But I will be ordering your book. Thank you so much. Join us next week, Wednesday at 9 p.m. Okay, Kathy, take us out.
Okay. Bye.
That worked. Yeah. Thank you so much. Catch you next week.
Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Bye-bye. Signing off for the Star Chamber Show.